Welcome to Mammalogy Ecology. I'm Devin Livergood, and today I'm talking with Sierra Pitts, who is a mammalogist and is going to be discussing her research on blue whales. Sierra, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Devin. I'm happy to be here.
So, tell me about blue whales, and what is it that makes you want to study them?
Well, I've always had a passion for marine life ever since I was a little girl. I really grew the obsession from my dad because I remember growing up as a kid, our bookshelves would just be packed with books about sharks and whales and fish, and I thought it was so cool.
So you've always kind of had this thought of growing up that studying marine life is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I've just always felt so drawn to it, you know? Like, it's something inside me just tells me that that's what I'm meant to do.
All right, I gotcha. So why blue whales? What makes them so interesting?
Honestly, what's not to love about blue whales?
You know what? I don't know. I really don't know much about blue whales. I think I know that they're pretty big, though.
Yep, you'd be correct there. In fact, they are the largest animal to have ever existed that we know of.
The largest?
Yep, the largest.
Sheesh!
They weigh up to 170 tons and are about 30 meters long, which, for comparison, is the equivalent of 3 school buses in length and the same as about 15 school buses in weight. Their tongue alone can weigh the same as a baby elephant.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, so they're pretty incredible in their size alone, really, but that's just scratching the surface of why they're so cool.
Well, obviously they're special because they can breathe underwater, right?
Sort of. Yes, they're mammals, so they need oxygen. They have a blowhole, and they breathe underwater by holding their breath for periods of time, and then they come back to the surface for air and then dive back down again.
Right, right. So what is it that they're doing when they dive? Do they play around like dolphins or do like kickflips like killer whales? Or
not really. So because they're so big, those movements are difficult for them and would require a lot of speed and force to be able to perform those playful actions that we see from above from other animals. They do play and have interactions between each other, but most of the time their big exciting actions come from them eating. So blue whales have a really cool foraging behavior because they use this really fancy technique called ram filter feeding to lunge feed at their prey.
And their prey is?
Krill. So they are essentially a krill obligate diet because of their physiology. They can't move quickly and as agile as killer whales or dolphins do to catch prey. So they have evolved this filter feeding technique because they can swallow mass amounts of prey at a time and be more efficient in their prey catch. Krill congregate in these basically what look like clouds underwater, and the whales will attack that to get as much krill as possible. It really is amazing to watch. They open their jaw 90 degrees because they have this non-synovial temporomandibular joint.
Damn.
Which means that they do not have a joint capsule, and therefore that allows them to have a larger range of motion. And they rotate their body anywhere from 90 to 360 degrees in order to have the best angle at their patch of krill. And they just take one giant gulp, and then they push all of that water back out against their baleen, and then swallow the krill that's left in their mouth.
Baleen? So they don't have teeth like killer whales?
No. Blue whales are members of the group of whales called baleen whales. Baleen is basically a giant comb with lots of strands that act as a filter. And it's actually made up of keratin, which is the same material as human hair and fingernails.
Strange, but very cool to say the least. So if all they eat is krill, and krill are these tiny little organisms, then they must have to eat a lot of krill a day.
They do. So in terms of volume, at least to our perception, they do have to eat a lot of krill. But if you think of it in terms of allometric scaling, they really only eat a small percentage of their body weight because they have a much lower metabolism than, say, a mouse that needs to eat a much larger percentage of its body weight in a day to keep up with its metabolic rate.
Gotcha. So it's about how much they eat in relation to their size.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay, so they eat a lot of krill, and they do this by lunge feeding. Do they have to hunt in groups to get the krill in these clouds, or do they travel in groups to eat like other animals do?
Not exactly. So krill naturally congregate at certain depths, about 100 meters below the surface, and then deeper again at about 160 to 250 meters below. Blue whales don't have to hunt in groups like others might do because their prey is already so easy for them to catch. But they are seen traveling in groups during certain instances that are related to seasons, location, interactions between each other.
So they're pretty social.
They can be. There have been many, many studies done on blue whale sociality, and there really isn't any concrete evidence. But we do see fairly common patterns. So males tend to travel solo during migrations and then join groups for foraging events. Females tend to travel with a calf or a male partner during breeding season and after calving season when they are weaning their newborn. Groups tend to form during foraging events, most likely because they're always looking for food. So there are these certain patterns and locations we see them grouping up in, but they really don't have families or pods as we might think of other animals having.
So not really families, but they have to mate and raise young to reproduce and keep the population sustained. So how do they do that?
So there's been one very important study done and a documentary made about it, where a group of researchers set out to observe blue whales in the Eastern Northern Pacific population, or EMP for short, in their summer grounds, which is off the coast of California, and then their winter grounds over in Costa Rica. And they predicted that in Costa Rica, they would find evidence of mating and evidence of the area being a calving ground for these blue whales. And what they found was that they found whales eating there. And that's important because ever since we have known about blue whales' existence, all of the research has said that they migrate north to colder waters during the summer to eat a ton of krill and stock up on fat reserves. And then they migrate south during the winter to warmer waters, and they just live off of their fat reserves. So this was a really big discovery that they don't fast for months at a time, as we thought they did. And these researchers also did see mating behavior there, and that was expected during mating season. They hoped to find multiple pregnant females in the Costa Rica dome, and there was one that they found, and she did end up giving birth to her calf there. And this was a huge discovery because not really much is known about how blue whales reproduce.
So they discovered that this Costa Rica dome is a pretty important place for these whales and for the survival of the population. What about this dome is so special, and why is it exactly a dome?
So exactly, it's very important. This was a huge discovery because this dome is what we call a thermocline biological hotspot. It's basically shaped as a dome underwater, and it's a thermocline that is created by a mix of wind and currents that push cold water into the region and create this upwelling of cold water that meets the warm tropical water near the surface and creates this biological hotspot for so many different organisms. And it changes every year due to the variation in those conditions. So this area is really, really important for blue whales and, as I said, many other animals, and that's why it should be looked at for protection soon.
Along with that, are blue whales protected now?
Blue whales are protected under a lot of different policies and have made a huge comeback ever since the commercial whaling boom in the early 1900s. They are currently protected under the Endangered Species Act and the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and we have seen their numbers come back up.
I also saw on the IUCN, International Union of Conservation of Nature's, red list that they're endangered. Is this because of that whaling boom that they're endangered now, or...?
Yes. So they were hunted to near extinction in the early 1900s because of advancements in the human world in technology, and it was just a crazy time for humans overexploiting every resource that we could find. I mean, you look at all of the classic examples of buffalo, raccoons, and whales are another classic example, where they all almost became extinct because humans are just so greedy.
So greedy.
This was before the era of modern science that we consider now, in which conservation and management are a really important focus. But ever since their protection, they've made a comeback, and blue whales in the EMP population are at about 97% of their carrying capacity.
Wow, so they are surviving and thriving.
They are.
I've heard a lot of buzz about the killer whales in Washington and that they're not doing so great because of the boats. They mess with their ability to catch salmon. Is there anything similar to this for blue whales?
Yes, actually, it is nearly the exact same problem. So what you're referring to, the problem that you're referring to, is anthropogenic noise. Basically, everything makes noise in the ocean because water is really good at transmitting sound. The waves, the wind, other animals in the ocean, everything makes noise, and this can disrupt blue whales' calls.
Calls. Like Dory speaking whale from Finding Nemo. That's a real thing?
Yes, exactly like Dory. And she's actually pretty spot on with the low rumbly sounds, especially for blue whales.
Respect to Dory.
Blue whales can produce calls below the 20 hertz frequency range, which is really low and out of human hearing. So we have to edit these calls in order to hear them. But yes, they produce calls and songs. The males produce A, B song in search of company or a mating partner. They also produce A and B calls when in presence of other whales. And both males and females produce D calls, especially when foraging.
So they have their own language, and that's how they communicate underwater?
Exactly. We just don't quite have their entire language figured out yet.
Wait, so I thought boats were just a problem for killer whales because of the echolocation problem. But blue whales talk instead of echolocate, so how do the boats affect them?
So boats are a part of that anthropogenic noise that I was explaining. There's actually quite a lot of human activity that's part of the noise problem. Shipping lanes, major ports, marine exploration, oil drilling, it's all part of the problem. These things produce low-frequency calls in the range that blue whales produce and hear, and they interfere with their calls. It makes it really difficult for them to communicate over the sound of other loud noises.
I can imagine. Humans are loud, and I feel that way in a loud room when I can't hear the person next to me.
Yes, it's exactly like that. So imagine you're at a concert, and you need to tell your friend you're going to go grab drinks. You say, hey, I'm going to go grab us some beers. And they go, what? And you say, getting drinks. And that is the basic bare minimum of the conversation needed to communicate. Versus sitting like we are now, where I can explain all of this blue whale stuff to you in great detail because we can hear each other very clearly. And that is exactly what scientists are looking at right now. Because of the COVID pandemic, there hasn't been much international shipping and boating going on. We've all been at home. So for the first time since studying these whales, we are able to finally listen to a nearly quiet ocean. And the prediction is that these whales might have a much more complicated vocabulary than we hear with all of the normal anthropogenic noise.
Wow, that's really cool. And it sucks that humans are just so loud. But hopefully instead of A, B, and D calls, maybe they'll be able to use the entire alphabet.
Exactly. That may very well be the case. And we really hope to find out soon.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Sierra, for all that interesting knowledge about blue whales. However, I did a bit of my own research before this interview, and I was wondering if I could ask you some questions.
Of course. Fire away.
All right. So, I don't know if these are facts, but I need you to double check.
Sure.
And I think we talked about this a little earlier, that blue whales were almost hunted to extinction.
Yes.
Like, completely extinct.
Yes. So, blue whales are all across the world. They're in every ocean. And in different regions, people exploited that more than other regions. But in total, there was almost 500,000 whales killed between about 1900 to 1940.
Wow. And do whales feel pain and emotions?
I would like
to think. Just for all the whale hunters, if they're listening.
I would like to think that they do. There has been research, and obviously we see that they have this level of sociality to where we think that they do feel emotions to the extent that we might.
I saw that a blue calf whale grows about 90 kilograms of weight per day in its first year.
That is true.
That's crazy.
Basically, what whales do is their moms go and eat all this krill and have all these fat reserves, and then they give birth to their child, and then their child eats off of that milk that they have that's super high in fat percentage.
Nice. And, all right, so my next fact is, I heard that 18% of blue whales lift their fluke when they dive.
Yes, so the fluke is the little tail flip that you see at the end, which is typical of a humpback dive. But blue whales have only been found to do this in 18% of them, and it's thought to be a personality characteristic, which I think is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. I wish if I was a whale, I'd have that personality.
Me too.
And last but not least, cortisol. I heard this mentioned on the web. I have no idea anything about it, but I was figuring maybe you could shed some light.
So, yes, cortisol, if you didn't already know, is the chemical in your body when you're stressed. So you and I have cortisol when we're really stressed, like right now during finals. We have a lot of cortisol in our body, and whales have earwax, and their earwax gets laid down year by year, and it starts to create these basically rungs like you can see on a tree or in fish otoliths, which is how they age them. And you can test those layers for chemicals. And what scientists have done is test that earwax from whales throughout the years, and they have seen that there's increased cortisol levels during the whaling era and during World War II.
Wow.
Yeah, as humans, we have our good and bad, and we have a lot to learn about these whales and how to coexist with them in a way that's not damaging to them. They're such beautiful creatures, and we really could learn a lot from them.
And that is very true. I've learned a lot about blue whales today. So thank you, Sierra, for joining us here today and sharing your wealth of knowledge.
Of course. Thanks, Devin. It was a pleasure to chat with you today.
Thank you guys all for listening to this week's episode of Mammalogy Ecology. I'll catch y'all on the fluke side.